I know Rome wasn't built in a day, but come on. It took more than a century to build Washington, D.C. And I've got some help here. Hit it, kids!
Welcome to American Esoterica!
If history class gives you the Butch Cassidy, this is the Sundance Kid. The essential stuff in between. The personalities, events, and other ephemera that shape our history and culture. I'm Brian Powers. The planning of the Federal City got off to a considerably shaky start at the hands of Pierre L'Enfant, which created a roadblock that would prevent his grand vision from taking shape. At least, that's what happened at the outset. But history is very rarely a linear narrative. There was considerable drama in the planning and construction of the Capital District. Not just from L'Enfant, but from other crafty partisans as well. For instance, Founding Father Robert Morris shrewdly negotiated to have the Capital move to Philadelphia for 10 years while the Federal City was under construction, assuming that once the seat of government had been entrenched for a decade, it would be too difficult to move. Besides, why have a capital city in a location out in the wilderness when you could have it in the country's largest city? The struggles with L'Enfant only provided grist for the mill of keeping Philadelphia on top. They even constructed a massive house for the president, which took 5 years to build, by which time Washington was no longer president. John Adams politely declined its use, adding insult to injury. When the year 1800 rolled around, Philadelphia could pretend no more. The government moved to its permanent home. George Washington stayed up on the progress of the Federal City even after he retired, keeping in touch with the commissioners charged with carving the district from the wilds. In 1798, after years of solid progress in creating government buildings and infrastructure kept him in an optimistic outlook, a new problem suddenly emerged. The commissioners were so focused on the government side of things that they hadn't noticed the pace of private construction was dismally slow. After all, just like the Philadelphians, the vast majority of people assumed that the capital would succumb to inertia and stay stubbornly put. Nobody wanted to risk speculating on a city that didn't even fully exist yet in a hard-to-get-to location. Washington realized that it wasn't going to do any good to have a city for government business if there was no place for those seeking to do that business to stay. His step-grandson-in-law, himself a speculator in the new city, hinted strongly that should former President George Herbert Theodore Aloysius Walker Thompson Washington choose to build in the new city, it would go a long way towards settling any doubts. Washington did grab a lot near the Capitol and drew up plans to build a pair of townhouses. He died before they were built, which is just the same since the British burned them down in 1814 anyway. So in 1800, the federal capital moved to the city of Washington in the District of Columbia. Andrew Ellicott's plan for the city toned down L'Enfant's grand vision somewhat, especially the parts influenced heavily by the gardens at Versailles. The city was just too burdened with the strain of suddenly being the center of, well, everything, to enact such a grand plan. At least at first, and then second, and then third, and fourth, and so on. One part of L'Enfant's plan that did come to fruition was the Washington Canal. To effectuate transportation throughout the city, a massive canal was dug along Tiber Creek from the Potomac, past the White House, and straddling the mall before cutting across the foot of Capitol Hill and emptying out further south. So imagine you're standing at the Washington Monument and looking at the White House. That big road in front of you is Constitution Avenue, but in 1810 through the 1850s, it was a fairly wide canal, 80 feet across. Because of changing water levels, locks were added. And in 1837, the Lockmaster's house was built for the caretaker of the canal, right across the street from the White House. Of course, nothing stays pure in D.C. for long. Everything eventually goes to crap there. The canal was no exception. By the Civil War, it wasn't so much a canal as it was an open sewer that threatened the health of the city. It sat there unused, save for the, occasional sewage overflow. In 1871, someone got the bright idea to at least cover over the portion along the mall, and it became an official sewer instead of just, an actual one. Evidence of the canal is still around today. That Lockmaster's house, it's still standing, right next to Constitution Avenue, which covers the sewer formerly known as Tiber Creek. Washington couldn't even build monuments right. The Washington Monument began in 1848 and got off to a great start. 20,000 people were in attendance at the laying of the cornerstone, including founding widows Dolly Madison and Eliza Hamilton, as well as President James K. Polk and future presidents James Buchanan, Abraham Lincoln, and Andrew Johnson. But nothing so nice can last. And the private group that had been raising the money for construction had an internal change of administration, which alienated donors and caused it to go bankrupt in 1854. The Civil War put a pause on any public efforts to finish the massive obelisk, and Congress finally pulled the trigger on July 5th, 1876, in a fit of centennial plus one day fervor. It took until 1884 to complete the structure, and with the stone coming from a different quarry, it's pretty easy to tell which parts were built when. When it was finally completed, it was the tallest building in the world, and an 8.9-inch tip made of the rarest available metal was placed atop the structure to cap it off. So here's one for Trivia Night. The rarest metal at that time? Aluminum. The city was so busy growing that it forgot to implement another key element of L'Enfant's plan, the National Mall. Sure, they kind of left an open space, but they didn't really do anything about it. With a stinky canal running alongside it and then across it, it was less of a park-like atmosphere and more of an undeveloped mudlot in the heart of the city. President Millard Fillmore decided to do something about it, darn it, and he hired the nation's preeminent landscape artist, Andrew Jackson Downing, to create a plan for the mall. Downing had a different idea than L'Enfant. Where the latter saw sculpted gardens a la Versailles, the former saw a more rustic garden park that would serve as its own form of museum, full of indigenous American trees, shrubs, and flowers to showcase the country's natural beauty. And as he put his plan into action, I'm just kidding, Congress wouldn't provide any funds, so the plan was scrapped and the mall stayed muddy. Meanwhile, the Army Corps of Engineers got a wild hair to start dredging the Potomac in 1870, dumping the silt along the city's waterfront. And everybody knows, once you start dredging, you really can't stop. They didn't, until 1911, by which time they had moved 12 million cubic yards of material onto the tidal flats, yielding a whole bunch of new city to the west of the Washington Monument. It was a bunch of mud to be sure, but mud is still land. Speaking of mud, by the 1880s, the mall was nothing like we know it. A large train station had been built on it in 1872, which was a great place to shoot a president in 1881 if one were so inclined. The tracks cut across the mall from the south. Shanty towns grew up along the central core of the mall and surrounding area. Mud and muck filled the consistently trampled area. The flood of 1889 put the whole area under several feet of water, made way worse by sewers clogged with dirt and filth from unpaved roads. Pierre L'Enfant's vision of a great national meeting place in the heart of the capital had not only failed to materialize, it seemed to be receding even further into history. It's a shame, really. A national mall would have been a cool thing to have. This has been American Esoterica. All sounds were made by me, Brian Powers. Did I get it wrong? Did I get it right? Just want to talk about why aluminum was so rare in 1884? Drop me a note. The address is yell@americanesoterica.com. More information on the show and its episodes can be found at americanesoterica.com. Thank you for listening, and one more time, kids.
Bye.